I'd now like to introduce Deborah Anton, the Interim National Data Commissioner. Over the past two decades, Ms. Anton has worked in the APS with wide-ranging experience in legislation, regulation, policy and program delivery, including the establishment of the government's Computer Emergency Response Team, which is the primary point of contact for Australian businesses to prevent and respond to malicious cyber activity. Ms. Anton holds a Bachelor of Science with Honours and a Master of Management from the ANU. She has also completed the Company Directors course from the Australian Institute of Company Directors from the National Security College's Executive Development Program. Please welcome Deborah to the stage. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'd also like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Ngunnawal people, and extend my respect to their elders past, present and emerging. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction and from the invitation from the Grad Data Network to present to you today and to IPA as well for bringing together this important event. In my remarks today, I'm going to take you time travelling. We'll move between the past, the present and the future. I want to start much where Renee did on reflecting on some of the contemporary issues impacting the public service before delving into the origins of why we collect data and what we do with it. I then thought I'd cast back into my own history in the public service and reflect on some of the data opportunities and challenges that emerged for me at a very similar point in my career before returning to some of the challenges that I'm facing now as the National Data Commissioner. So, we are at an interesting point in time, and Renee's already touched on a couple of these, and they will influence our future. There's three forces that are kind of converging right now. In 3 days' time, we will have the federal election, and it's a really important point in the business of the public service. Talking to my colleagues in PM&C on Friday, there were around 1,900 election commitments they were tracking for the two major parties. I'm sure there's been more since. So there is a lot of work that we will have to do, much of it in the first 100 days, because they both have ambitious agendas. In about 7 weeks' time, as Renee reflected, we will have the APS review delivered to government, and it will set out a series of reforms that will reshape the future of how we do our work. The other component that matters in all of this from a data perspective is that in the next 18 months, according to Moore's Law, we will see the doubling of computer storage. And it's actually that unrelenting change in computer power that is really driving a lot of the technological innovation that means we're having a different conversation at this moment in time about what we can do with data. Taken together, those forces will actually reshape what we do and how we do it. What they won't change is why. As public servants, our job is actually to make sure that we are doing our bit to make sure Australia has a bright future. Your contributions matter to that. Now, we use data each and every day in the work that we do, as Renee reflected, in designing policy, delivering programs, just running the business of our departments, really. And long has it been thus. If we cast back into history, one of the more important starting points from a Western democracy perspective is the Doomsday Book. It was the Great Survey of England and Wales. It was ordered by William the Conqueror in 1085. At that point, perhaps he may have been less inspiringly named William the Administrator, because he was more concerned about how do you run a government. And this Great Survey was really about a survey of land holdings. Who owns the land? What's their value? And on that basis, he used it to levy taxes, redistribute power as it suited him. Importantly, the doom in the doomsday, I do just want to point out, we are having a conversation about taxes, but it wasn't meant to have a sinister meaning. What the doom in Old English meant was actually the application of the law. So it is a remarkable statistical document, if you think about it. It was handwritten, it was rebound on several occasions, and it was stored securely in a box, in the same way that we need to take care with the data that we hold now. And if you think about it, there are parts of the public service that are doing exactly the same work in the modern world. What's different, of course, is that the piece of technology. We're currently living in what is described as the fourth industrial revolution, and we've traversed the third over the last 40 or so years, and all of this really comes down to the power of computing and technology and what it means and how it is transforming our world. And as a public service, as Renee reflected, we really need to embrace technology. We need to remain progressive. So I'd like you to leave today inspired by what's possible and ambitious about how you can contribute to the public service. And I guess that concept of governance is important for me too, by using data. Now, in my job, I wouldn't have taken it on if I wasn't passionate about the possibilities of data. And last year, the grads held a Data in the Pub event at the industry department, and I reflected on some of what inspires me or has inspired me over the last 5 years, particularly as an SES officer. But you're going to hear from a lot of SES today about what they're doing right now. So I thought it would be perhaps more helpful to cast back into when I was at a similar point in my careers as you. And I wanted to offer you two stories that really highlighted for me the power of the data very early in my career. One of them went well, and the other is probably best described as a searing experience. We'll start with the good story. So I was working in the venture capital policy area back in the late 1990s, and we were trying to figure out how do we recreate the investment environment that had sprung up in Silicon Valley. It was deeply exciting and it was awesome. Commentators in the space had reflected that they thought the missing ingredient, or one of the missing ingredients in Australia, was the lack of spin-off companies from our public sector and research institutions. They just didn't seem to have that component. Why is that important? Well, the government invests billions of dollars in research. It wants a good return on investment. That was one reason. The second was, in terms of creating a strong economy, you want to have really good technology transfer and you want your companies to have the capacity to absorb new ideas and to work effectively with the university sector. And the third was, I'm going back to the present now, as based on some recent work by the industry department, identified that new businesses are disproportionately the drivers of growth and jobs in our economy. So we wanted to actually have these startup companies. We wanted to create better environments. Now, a whole bunch of policy solutions were being contemplated at the time. Do we have grant funding for universities? Do we do tax concessions? Government was underwriting venture capital funds at the time. It was all big, interesting, and exciting stuff. But from my perspective, we did have a bit of a problem. We didn't have any accurate information to base our policy advice on. We didn't know what the track record was of commercialisation in public sector institutions because no one had asked. We were relying on anecdotal evidence at best. And look, this is a small community, so everyone could have the conversation and kind of go, yeah, we know about this company, and that's fine. But from my perspective, if we were going to move beyond a conversation amongst people who understood the problem and try and take something through beyond an agency level conversation through the centrals and onto government, we actually had to have an evidence base. So all the enthusiasm of ministers and stakeholders and fellow public servants was terrific. But if you want to do policy intervention, you do have to have a foundation. And at the time, I was surprised and a little bit disappointed that no one seemed to understand why I was concerned about the evidence base. It was just so obvious that this was a problem. So it did feel like that moment of the emperor's new clothes. Hello. Interestingly, when I think back on it now, no one disagreed with me. It was very obvious. And sometimes it's how you frame an argument that can make all the difference in the world. So instead I said, how will we know if our intervention has been successful if we don't have a baseline? And everyone went, oh yeah, good idea. Okay, I'll learn about how I need to pitch an argument. So with that, I got an okay from what was then a coordinating committee around science and technology, so this was Commonwealth state agencies, to say, well, can I write out? It was as simple as writing out a letter. Can I write to the science agencies? Can I write to the universities and ask them a series of questions? So I talked to some of my colleagues. I wrote out the list I thought would be actually really useful in this sense. I had very low capacity, and if a statistician had done that, I'm sure they would have done it much more, it would have been much better. So on that basis, I wrote up my report and I felt like we had somewhere to start with. Importantly, that report was taken up by professionals a few years later and it's gone on and we still produce now the National Survey of Research Commercialisation. I'm not sure how many of my original questions remained, but it is nice in something that I think it is really important about how we change our world and we make the most of the innovation ecology that this still continues to this day. So later in today's agenda, you'll have an opportunity to have a discussion about how you use data in your agencies. And it's really important because the use of data, as I hope my comments and Renee's reflect, is that it's a very simple and fundamental question and very much at the foundation of what we do in our work in government. So if that was the good experience, and it's really nice to see this thing still going from just having a conversation, what was the bad one? All right, so I need to start by painting a picture of the time because this will make no sense to you otherwise. It was over 20 years ago and I just moved from my first job in the public service, which was as a patent examiner, over to the industry department. And the most exciting part of this, I had a computer on my desk. Believe it or not, at the time, the Patent Office had a typing pool. So I was working in the biotechnology area. I would write out by hand my reports and they would be sent off to somebody else to type up. And then it would come back to me, and sometimes I was writing complicated chemical formulas. It would come back and I'd have to go, no, it was CO, not CH. So industry was awesome. They had a computer on the desk. At the same time, I had a director who was an ex-army major, and he was a great guy, but it was also fair to say he was still coming to terms with technology. So I convinced him that we should try this amazing invention. It was really pretty special. It was called Mail Merge. Now, if you've used Word, you'll know this is just a standard functionality of Word. I know at the time it was a bit revolutionary. The idea was you took a table of, here's an Excel file of the people we want to write out letters to, and instead of having to type in the names and addresses every time, you just pull on that file and it pre-populates the address block and the salutation in a letter. It was revolutionary at the time. I was very excited. So I thought this would save us heaps of time. It would be fantastic. What could go wrong? Any guesses? I'm embarrassed to say it's very, very simple. Pretty much, yeah. There were errors in my data. So rubbish in, rubbish out. If you had an extra space between two things, it just came out wrong. And yes, I misspelled one of the minister's names. I was so excited about the technology and the idea, I lost my focus on the basic input. So my director, thankfully, caught the errors before that got sent up to the minister's office. And I was given an order never to use Mail Merge again. I think what is best described is a military-style dressing down, which was a bit of a surprise for a public servant, and I find myself wanting to straighten my shoulders just recalling that moment. It wasn't a great experience. I also learnt something that I remember to this day was, at the moment your boss is really cranky and angry and telling you that you have made a mistake, the only thing you need to offer is an apology. It's not the moment to say, but I worked out what I did wrong and I can fix this. It'll be really great still. Come back with that a few days later when they're actually more willing to hear that message. And we did continue to use Mail Merge. So why do I share those two stories with you now? I hope you can recognise in those two tales that there are moments that will arise for you in your jobs each and every day where you have an opportunity to lead. Because, of course, leadership and innovation happens at all levels. And by participating in the Grad Data Network, you have the power to make the most of data. In today's experience, by coming along today and listening to these stories of hearing what is happening in the public service, you also have a responsibility to go back into your agencies to have conversations with your colleagues, because they haven't had the time out today. They haven't had the opportunity to think about this. In the same way that my Army major really hadn't had the opportunity to come to terms with technology in that moment. So be curious. See how you can help solve the wicked problems, the complex policy challenges, where a linear and narrow consideration of the problem is not enough. Whether you come to today's session as a policy person, as somebody working in program delivery, a data analyst or a technologist, you each have an important role to play in how we can use data better and more effectively in the public service. The other point I'd like to emphasise, particularly from that second story, is that when we're dealing with technology, things can and do go wrong. And for that reason, I think we really need to approach how we're sharing data and also how we use technology humbly. And we have to take the public with us. Renee reflected very much on those themes of trust And it's at that point I want to pull us back out of the 1990s, back up to the present day, and talk to you about some of the challenges that I have in the Office of the National Data Commissioner. So in 2016, the Productivity Commission was commissioned by government to look at how we are sharing and using data. And it concluded that we really need a step change in what we're doing in the public service. We're behind some of our international counterparts. The business sector is streaks ahead of us. We need to do something different. And it's on the back of that that the Office of the National Data Commissioner was created. And again, reflecting on some of the comments from Renee, for me, if we're going to improve how we're sharing and using data, we not only need to mature our capability, but we also have to become better at being willing to engage with risk in the public service of doing something different. One of the conclusions from the Productivity Commission report was that we have a risk-averse culture. But I don't think that we set out to be risk-averse. In fact, I think it's more a symptom of problems that we're trying to solve and not being sure what we can do about those. One of the most enduring reflections I had from considering the state of the service results in my last agency was that there was a bit of difference in how different people engage with risks, from APS level through to executive through to senior executive. There was that variation. As senior executives, we seem to be more inclined to engage with risk, high risk appetite, because I guess from my perspective, if we're not making change, we're not doing our jobs. The grads and the APS officers had a similar appetite. They were willing to have bright ideas, and I think you have the freedom, I guess, to play with concepts, to make mistakes. What was challenging then, and those who had less appetite for risk, were actually at the EL layer. And I think that's interesting because they've got to actually do quality control for APS level staff and make sure that the advice is of high quality. And potentially also rein in the SES where we're being too ambitious and it's not practical what we're asking them to do. So if we want that group particularly to think about how you can engage more with risk, then we actually have to help them and give them guidance so that they can more effectively weigh up the risks and benefits of what they can do with data. And it's for that reason that in March of this year we released the Sharing Data Safely package. And this is guidance to public service agencies. The picture on this slide is of the public version because we also have to have a conversation with the public about what we're doing. But there is also more technical guidance available for agencies on our website, so please take a look. And this piece of work was very much a down payment on some of the work that we're doing around legislation. So one of the key recommendations of that PC report was that there's a lot of things in legislation, and you heard Renee refer to some of those, that actually prevent us from sharing data in a way that we should just be doing. But it's hard to change legislation. So rather than go through there were 500 secrecy and other provisions that were identified as potentially impacting on data sharing. Rather than go back and change them one by one, what my office is charged with doing is introducing new legislation to make data sharing easier. Essentially to have a bill where we can say, this is how we want to share data, this is why we want to share data, and these are the controls, which is very much what this data sharing framework and risk management principles go to. These are the controls we'll put in place while we are doing that. So hopefully we don't have to continue to go back to Parliament each time we see something that we need to do that is eminently logical and sensible, but the legislation prevents that. In order to design that legislation to date, we've had over 10 co-design workshops across the public service, so some of your colleagues no doubt will have turned up to those, and as well as IDCs, bilateral meetings, all of that sort of stuff. And what we're trying to do is design some governance, essentially, a framework that will help the public service do its job more effectively. But to do that, we have to get legislation through Parliament, and that's about bringing the public with us. Renee reflected very well on the challenges of trust. And we're very concerned with, well, what do the public think about this when we talk about data? It's probably fair to say there's a bunch of people when we talk about data that think we're actually talking about their mobile phone plans. There's others who assume we share it all anyway, and why would there be a problem? There's a bunch who haven't even thought about it, and there's another group that actually are quite deeply concerned. So we have to engage in a deep and honest conversation about what we're trying to do if we're going to earn the public's trust. We have to demonstrate to them that we understand the risks that we are engaging with, particularly around privacy and security. But that were also trying to find benefits that will make a difference for them each and every day. Importantly, and this is one of those elements of engaging with risks in my job, we have to acknowledge where we haven't got it right. You will be unsurprised, I suspect, to know that the public, when we're having a conversation with this, will raise the census, robo-debt, my health records, 10% MBS, PBS release. So we have to be willing to talk about those. What's unfortunate in some ways is the public, of course, hears the headlines and this is the stuff we can pull from the media. What they don't hear is what the public service has done to remediate those, and they also very rarely hear the success stories. So over the course of today, you'll hear a group of SES talk about some of those success stories, and this slide we've pulled together based on things that we know we're doing well. But they're not things that we can grab really from the media. They are stories we have to continue to tell ourselves. So you, as people who are going to listen to those success stories, are also a really important part of conveying that to your friends and family, where people are interested and engaged, have that conversation with them. My hope is that this time next year, I would be able to report back to you that we have legislation in place. But returning to my opening comments, we've got an election in 3 days' time. We'd get a new minister either way. Ours chose to retire. So the challenge immediately before me is going back and briefing a new minister to say, this is what we're doing. This is the agenda. This is how it will make a difference to the public. And to get them behind that halt and ultimately to bring legislation before Parliament. But we still have a way to go. We're going to continue on that journey over the next 12 months. And if you're interested in staying up to date, you can. We publish information on our website and blogs and LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff. So if you want to stay part of that conversation, please connect up with us. In closing, though, I wanted to reflect, I guess going back on that time travelling journey, I've been doing this for 23 years now. I'm very proud to be a public servant. I don't think we often say that enough to ourselves. And what we do is really, really important. Having the APS review at the moment is a great reminder of that. And what we do matters. And it's not, for that same reason, I think, what making effective use of data matters, because we need to modernise how we're managing the public service. It matters in terms of all those things that Renee described for you, how we deliver services, how we advise government, how we run government, even that simply. And it will be a fundamental input to some of those technologies that you will hear emerging ideas about, around machine learning, artificial intelligence. All those data is a key input to some of those technological applications. But it's not an end in itself. It's a tool that helps us do our jobs. And how we do those jobs ultimately rests in your hands. So thank you very much for taking the time to come along today. I hope you can take some valuable lessons back into your organisations and display the leadership I know that you're all very, very capable of. Thank you.